Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our 7-county listening area in central Iowa. Welcome to our hosts, Gina McAndrews, Susan Franson, and Paul Wearson.
We are all happy to be here to greet our listeners and talk about attracting people to Iowa.
Well, it's sure good to have Paul here for that as well. But I thought the purpose of Local Talk Wednesday to show how our listening area is a great place to be.
Well, that's true. But I read a recent article in the paper about Ron Cox, director of Cirrus, pointing out we aren't going to increase the population of Iowa by natural increase, having more babies, partly because they often grow up and move away, but by attracting immigrants from out of state and out of the U.S. I think that is the business of Cirrus, the Center for Industrial Research and Service. So we were fortunate that Ron was available to talk with us this morning.
Some of that's already happening in Iowa. I remember when we talked with Chris Deal of Jefferson back in 2019, and he spoke a lot about the innovative way that Jefferson had joined with a project called The Forge.
I thought an update on that project would be a good place to begin, so I called Chris yesterday, and this is what he told me.
My name is Chris Deal. I'm from Jefferson. And born and raised there, left for 13 years, went off to college, ended up traveling the world a little bit, and then had a chance to come back to Jefferson back in 2016 to be involved with the family business. My family owns, operates Deal's Orchard over there, and to raise my family. So I've got three young kids that I'm raising in rural Greene County now, and absolutely love being back there. Since moving back, I've been able to be involved with several community projects, including schools and a lot of other initiatives locally, one of which I believe we're going to talk about more today, and that being the Jefferson Forge, which was a collaboration between our local schools, community colleges, and industry, computer science industry, to try to create a new, unique training program that is tailored toward rural America. I do telecommute, and I do come down to Des Moines, so I still work for an engineering firm, and I drive down to Des Moines once a week. When I moved to Jefferson in 2016, part of that was based on an ability to work remotely. So I've been doing remote work long before the global pandemic made it the in thing to do.
Did that have anything to do with your working with the Forge?
No, the teleworking was separate. If anything, it just allowed me to move back to the community. So the connection with the Forge really came from some work I did with the engineering firm. We do mechanical, electrical designs for building projects, and I had worked with the Forge in Des Moines. So the company, at that point, it was Pillar Technology, and they had expanded into Des Moines, and I had done the design for that project, and so it was through that connection and future communications that I realized they wanted to come to rural Iowa, and I had helped make them aware of Jefferson and some of the great things we had going on in Jefferson and Greene County. And one thing led to the next, and we eventually ended up with the first rural forge in our historic downtown.
Now, I have seen references to the forge in other parts of the state. What is the forge?
The Forge is what Pillar Technology, so Pillar Technology is a computer science or software development firm based in, originally based in Columbus, Ohio, and then they expanded into Ann Arbor because they were doing a lot with autonomous vehicles. They had an office in Silicon Valley on Palo Alto, and they came to Des Moines because of the agricultural tech industry. The Forge is what they call their offices, and as they've explained it to me several times, they call it the Forge because that's where new ideas are forged. And they have they had a really unique approach to problem solving that incorporated a heavy emphasis on teamwork, a heavy emphasis on people collaborating together and forging these ideas. So the Forge is just the name of the office. The company was Pillar Technology, and then they were acquired by Accenture, which is a huge global corporation, 400,000 plus employees. And so now Accenture is the company that owns, operates the Forge in Des Moines and Jefferson and Columbus and anywhere that Pillar Technology had an office.
Well, one of the reasons that I'm calling you today to find out how this has developed since we first spoke a couple of years ago, I have an interview with Ron Cox from Cirrus, who is concerned with bringing people into Iowa. And Forge, it seems to me, is making use of the what's already here, the educational institutions and the people in Iowa who, with their great work ethic, which incidentally is, I believe it's nationally known. Oh, you're from Iowa. Good.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And so is this at all involved with bringing new industries besides the Forge to Iowa?
Well, the first, I'll say I wholeheartedly agree with the idea that we need to bring people to Iowa. But I also think that we need to keep people here in Iowa. And so you go back and you look at the last few generations, and there was this consistent departure, exodus from the state for people leaving to go to whether it be Twin Cities or Kansas City or Chicago. I can't tell you the number of friends and colleagues who relocated out of the state because at that point that's where the opportunities were. And so I think it's a multi-pronged approach as we look at what's the future of our state and how do we put Iowa in the best position possible. And so this initiative really is geared at keeping our talent here and, on a bigger picture, bringing opportunities that haven't existed in rural Iowa effectively back to rural Iowa and rural America. And so one of the core tenets here is that we have talent in rural Iowa. And I wholeheartedly believe and have seen it time and time again, we have the same caliber of talent in rural Iowa that you can find in any city on the coast. The difference has been where are people exposed to opportunities. And so what's happened on the coast in Silicon Valley is kind of the case in point, but there was so much opportunity there that was presented to people living in that area and in the zip codes around that area that we've seen this kind of this dichotomy created between urban and rural and coasts and the Midwest. And that's led to, I think, a lot of challenges. It hasn't happened overnight. It's happened over years and generation plus. But we're at a point now where there's this realization that, well, we've got the talent. We still have the people. So why can't we bring the opportunities to them? And so one of the thoughts behind this is that, well, Silicon Valley, they have so many people there. They're in the exact opposite of we as the state of Iowa of wanting people, and especially of rural communities that absolutely want population. Silicon Valley has too many people. The housing prices are insane, and they're trying to figure out how can they address that issue. Well, they have been, and for a considerable amount of time, they've been outsourcing work whenever they could, and a lot of that work is outsourced to places like India. And what we've realized is, well, we can do that work. We can do it just as well, if not better, in the Midwest. And why don't we send that work and the great pay that comes with it to rural America and create some of these opportunities that haven't been there before. And so this whole initiative, and that's why there's been so much excitement with it. We've seen people like the co-founder of LinkedIn and the CTO of Microsoft. They've come to Jefferson, Iowa, Little Jefferson, Iowa, to talk about this initiative because they see the overarching challenge and they realize that we need to do something about it. And this strikes them as something that has a lot of possibility to create opportunities to keep population here and to use that as a way to grow rural and bring some vitality back to rural communities.
So to get back then to the update, so for those who didn't hear from you 2 years ago, why don't you explain just how this developed?
The idea came about when, like I said earlier here, I was reconnecting with an individual with Pillar Technology at the time, and they indicated they had this vision for a rural training pipeline where they'd collaborate with a K-12 school, with a community college, and create this training program. And it's very analogous to a skilled workforce training program that someone might go through to learn welding skills or advanced manufacturing skills. And so learning the skills of coding and software development. And so we, through several conversations and many months and years, created a structure that's a collaboration between Greene County Community School District and surrounding school districts within roughly a 30-mile radius. So that includes districts like Carroll and Perry and so many more in between. And then a collaboration with Iowa Central Community College and DMAC as well to create this, the curriculum and the training program and the classes so that when someone graduates high school, they can roll right into a training program that is put on by the Forge or now by Accenture. And that training program leads to future employment and a fantastic job with the company, something that they can stay in a rural community, or if they want to, they can go and work anywhere that Accenture might have an office, and then down the road they can easily come back home if that's what they want to do. But it's creating these opportunities and a pathway and a training program that didn't exist before.
And it's been very successful, it sounds like.
Yeah, it is, and we've been very happy with how it's progressed. And so one of the pieces that we knew coming into this, several pieces that we knew, one, it hadn't been done before, and so there is going to be, there is a vision, there is an idea behind it, but there is going to be adaptability needed, there's going to be pivots that needed to be made as this went from an idea to actual implementation. What we've seen is that Accenture has brought an incredible amount of resources to the table to create what they've called the internship, or their internship program. That's for the students who are just finishing the community college courses and rolling into this first the first training phase, the first step with Accenture. Now, to get to that, even there weren't community college. There wasn't a course or a trajectory created yet with community colleges. And so DMAC and Iowa Central both have collaborated incredibly well and created a course on a very, very short timeline or several courses. DMAC has a 36-credit pathway. Iowa Central has a 27-credit pathway that allows students to get the fundamentals they need to roll into this training then that's put on by Accenture. And so it's been very, very encouraging to see how quickly the infrastructure has been able to come together. We've got in Greene County, we now have a new high school, a new career academy that's attached directly to it. So courses are now being taught there. But when this idea came to be, the career academy hadn't been built yet. And so worked again with Iowa Central and DMAC and students who are already at the tail end of high school and rolling into their post-secondary education, they ended up creating forming the first cohort. And so it took a while to get the pump primed with this idea and this pipeline. And what we see now is the first cohort just finished up in May. And so they got their, what was effectively 3 semesters worth of coursework through Iowa Central and through DMAC, and then started with Accenture. And Accenture created this internship program. It was a mixture of several programs they had in existence already, but really tailored it toward the students and the needs and the opportunities for the local students here. And we have been really blown away by what the experience has been like. So if it's all right, I have a quick testimonial commentary from one of the students that went through this. And so she says, I had such a great experience with Accenture. They did a fantastic job of aligning us with our core interests while also providing great professional development support and a technology-based foundation. I genuinely wish I had more time to continue to learn from their company-wide learning system. And it goes on and on, but she ends with the saying, this was probably one of the best decisions I've ever made. Now, this student, she opted, because after the internship, there's the next step and what we're working with Accenture to develop now is the apprenticeship. But she opted to instead stay with her current employer. So she was based in Carroll, and her current employer was great to work with and offered her advancement within their corporation. And so this student who went through the program, she didn't end up going down the route of working for a software development company, but she ended up doing computer-related tasks within her company and saw advancement and saw opportunity and has a completely different career trajectory now, which is exactly what we're looking to do. So we're very, very optimistic. It's still very early in the process, but there's a lot of interest there. Both Iowa Central and DMAC say the number of students that would potentially pursue this as a career pathway is solid and growing. And so, yeah, we're excited for where we're at. We know there's still a long way to go to achieve the goals of the program because they were very lofty goals because there's just that much more opportunity here.
Thanks to Chris Deal. In case you just tuned in, this is KHOI Community Radio. And today we're talking about Iowa can grow its population by attracting new businesses to our state. The person who is most responsible for guiding this effort is Ronald Cox, director of CIRUS, Center for Industrial Research and Service. We started out this topic by getting an update from Chris Deal, who told us about the beginning of such a project back in 2019.
Hello, Ron.
Good morning.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about CIRUS and what you've been up to lately?
You bet. CIRUS is a center at Iowa State University. We're tasked with helping improve the Iowa economy. We've been doing this for about 60 years. We have 40 staff in Ames and across the state. We work with close to 2,000 businesses in Iowa each year. We help them with a variety of things. We help them connect to students and do projects with students. We hold educational events. We can take their products and break them in laboratories, connect them to consultants, help them develop quality systems and productivity systems. We do a little bit about everything. We work in kind of five broad areas, growth, helping companies grow, leadership, productivity, how you make things more efficiently, technology transfer, and workforce.
And so how does it work? So if I wanted to start a company or do some research, what would I need to do?
So we don't help start companies. There's lots of programs at Iowa State and across the state helping people start companies. We work only with existing companies. So what you can do is give us a call. You'll find out about us through a newsletter or maybe the website. Other people you contact at Iowa State will connect you to us. We have this approach called engage, educate, embed. So when you call us, we first want to engage and find out what the real problem is you're trying to solve to make sure we're solving the right problem. Then we provide the educational materials, either from faculty, students, our staff, our partners. And then our goal is to embed it in your company so that when we go away, you're still successful. Our goal is not to keep coming back to you over and over.
What kinds of projects, how many do you work on every month or week or year? How does that, I imagine some projects might last 6 or 8 months and others might be 6 or 8 weeks.
It is the full gamut. Somebody might say, I need this. Do you know where I can get some expertise, something? And it might be a referral to someone else. It might be they need counseling on something. They're trying to win a government contract and they're confused by something that the federal government or state government is doing. And they need advice of how to get through that hurdle. That might be a half an hour or an hour and a half. We'll do projects that can last hundreds of hours. If a company wants to implement an entire new system in their company, or they're trying to bring new technology into the company, and it's very involved, we might put a team together of consultants, faculty, and students, and that can last 3 months, 6 months. So it's the gamut. We try to be, call us if you want to engage with Iowa State University and you want to improve your company. We know where everything is at Iowa State and outside of Iowa State as well. We try to connect to dozens and dozens of partners.
Do you mostly work in Iowa, or do you have partners in the Midwest or all throughout the country?
Cirrus was formed to help improve the Iowa economy, so probably 99% of what we do is in Iowa, but we do things to help Iowa, and sometimes companies outside of Iowa want to come in. So we run the Iowa Lean Consortium. It's a network of several hundred companies that all chip in, and we bring in national speakers to help companies improve how they do things, finance companies, hospitals, manufacturers. We have lots of members from Omaha that they don't have an equivalent over there, so they joined the Iowa Lean Consortium.
And how did this get started? When did it get started, Cirrus?
So the roots go back to the early 1900s. The dean of engineering at the time saw ag extension, and he said, why don't we have an engineering extension to help grow businesses in Iowa. We've got Ag Extension and the College of Ag helping grow farms. Why don't we grow businesses? So he started it back in the early 1900s. That morphed into a teacher training program. So it basically changed into industrial tech and teaching high school teachers how to teach shop and things like that in the 50s. And a new dean in the early 60s said, hey, what happened to that? We should do that again. So in 1963, the Iowa Association of Business and Industry kind of lobbied the legislature and said, hey, we need to grow businesses in Iowa, and we need something. So the dean of engineering studied things across the country and said, we need a Cirrus kind of thing. And Cirrus was created in July 1, 1963.
Wow. And how long have you been involved?
That's a trick question. I'm as old as dirt. I've been at Cirrus for 25 years. I came here and thought I'd take the job for 5 years. It looked interesting. And then they made me the boss, and I've been here ever since. So I've been the director of Cirrus for 2 decades now.
That's exciting. Roughly how many companies do you help a year?
Almost 2,000. So we hold events across the state. That includes people coming to educational workshops. We'll hold workshops on, how to design things and how to get certified, the Food and Drug Administration and quality systems. We'll do 150 student projects every year. So if a company wants help designing a new process, designing a new electronics. We will help the company scope those problems and get them connected to the faculty in the classes so the students can work on the company's project.
You'll take a company's question or challenge and take that into the classroom if it's appropriate, and
yep.
Let the students really work on real life problems.
Yep. Yep. We'll also do research projects, so those tend to be longer. These are very applied, so we're not doing esoteric research. We've got companies in Iowa that have a problem that they just don't know how to solve, and they've not seen it anywhere, and so we'll look across campus and connect that company to a faculty member. And the state of Iowa invests in us. We have some funding to help small companies pay for part of that research. We have a number of federal programs that help fund some of this so that we are economical. We've got a program from the Department of Commerce to help manufacturers in Iowa. We've got a program from the Department of Defense to help companies sell their products or services to state, federal, local government. If you want to cut grass at the courthouse and you don't know how to get through the government red tape, we can help with that. We've got a grant from the Economic Development Administration to help Iowa companies and rural communities find workers. That's part of why I'm here today, to talk about that.
And so how do you go about finding these rural workers?
Not easy. It is a very, very, very complex problem. And I got going on this when we put out a newsletter, goes to about 20,000 people in Iowa. And I was looking at old newsletters from about 1970. And Cirrus, we also do industrial research. We had surveyed industry and said, what's your number one problem in 1970? And the number one problem was availability of workers. And the number one thing companies said they thought we needed was more apprenticeships. And so now it's 50 years later, and the number one problem we have is availability of workers. And we also have some people that think we need more apprenticeships. We do need more apprenticeships, but we need 20 other things too. So it's not a simple problem.
And why do you think we have so many problems getting workers?
There's one equation. We're going to do some math, right? This is simple math, though. The number of workers is equal to the population divided by 2. That's a very close number. There's about 300 million people in the United States. There's about 150 million workers. There's about 3 million people in Iowa. There's about 1.5 million workers. If you want more workers, you need more people. And
gotcha.
Iowa has had a population problem for 100 years. We're one of the slowest growing states in the country. And if we're not going to grow our population, it's going to be tough to grow our workers.
Well, this is Paul. I'm one of the hosts. And I just think that that sounds like a long-term problem that might have a solution in the new digital world. One byproduct of the pandemic is that people have learned that they can work from anywhere that they live. And I think that the Midwest might be a best-kept secret, because we all know that people in Boston and Atlanta and New York are trapped in traffic half the time. And it's a very stressful world to live in an urban area. And I think that probably rural America is a secret that they don't really tap into, because we have this great quality of life. At most of the rural high schools, the graduation rate is 98%. As our previous guest talked of, the situation where these people are relocating after college to other states and major urban areas. And my dream is that trend can be reversed somehow, since people can work wherever they live in the new digital world. And probably we need to make this less of a secret that this problem, that this world exists out here with highly trained and people with a great work ethic and background and education are available to work, and they can work in Iowa, and of course to attract companies too. And that's the great nut to crack, isn't it? How to make these things happen.
So I'm going to push back and challenge you. So if I can live in Iowa and work in Boston, why can't the person that lives in Boston sit in the suburbs and not commute and do the same job in downtown Boston? So the digital world has opened up lots of new possibilities. Lots of companies are looking at things differently. But there's a downside to it. It means if I'm a company in Iowa, I don't have to recruit Iowans anymore. I might recruit somebody from L.A. So it goes both ways. Yes, a person in Iowa could work elsewhere, but a person elsewhere could work for the company in Iowa. So it does give the worker a lot more opportunities, and it could help us, it could hurt us. So the question that we have to ask ourselves is, is rural Iowa, or even metropolitan Iowa, is that where people want to be? So every state has rural areas and metropolitan areas. And you have to decide, people are deciding where to live. And so if we're going to fix our population problem, that's one part of the solution. You would have to get people to move here, or you need births greater than deaths. But what's the number one reason people move? Most people move, about half the people that move are just moving in the same town they live in. They have more children or fewer, so they move to a bigger house or smaller. They have more income or less. So most moves occur because in the same community. The second biggest reason people move somewhere is for family. So we've had a loss of population in rural Iowa for decades and decades. There's fewer family members there, and it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. If we have fewer family members there, you have fewer people, in essence, drawing ex-family members back. The third biggest reason people move is for a job. And the digital world has messed with that, so this is past data, but people move for a job. And there's two kinds of people that move for a job. And it tends to be educated people. Educated people move for a professional job. So if I'm a chief financial officer and an accountant and I just graduated from University of Northern Iowa or Iowa State, I'm looking for an accounting job. And I'm willing to move pretty much anywhere in the United States for that job and to work for that kind of company. Now, some of those jobs are in Iowa, yes, but Minneapolis and Chicago and Denver are drawing these people. And we ask recruiters when they come to Iowa State, why do you recruit here? Iowans are geographically flexible. They want a great job. They want to work hard and they'll live anywhere. So recruiters tell us that on the East Coast, to try to get somebody from Georgia to come to North Carolina is tough because Georgians like to live in Georgia. But Iowans are easy to recruit away because they just want to work somewhere well and work hard, and so they're geographically flexible. So the other kind of person that will move for a job, right, are immigrants, and they're trying to improve their life. And the United States is a great place to live. So, you know, the United States is successful, and that is another potential way to bring people in. So workforce is very complex. There are, you try to draw people to the state. That's one solution. The other solution is to draw people into the workforce that already live here. So that's in our workforce effort. That's another target we look at. There are people not working today that could, if you solve their problem. There are women with young children that either daycare is not available or they can't afford the daycare because the wage structure is too low in the state, or maybe the companies don't have the flexibility for them to work when they are able to work. So beyond recruiting more people to Iowa, the other solution is to help address workers, the people that are here's problems, so that they can be pulled into the workforce.
And what are some of the projects that you're working on to get more people here, working with Iowans?
So we have a new program we put together called IWIN, Iowa Workforce Innovation Network. We're not doing it alone because workforce is too complex. So we're doing two different things. We have a community approach where we go into a community and we bring 20 plus leaders together, typically spearheaded by the economic developer, and we show them all the data. We have 27 kinds of people and virtual people. I'll explain that later if we've got time. But we show them the potential. How many people out there? Where are the people? If you were more successful at pulling in that group of people, people with a disability, people migrating from another state, etc., how many is it? Is it 5 or 500 or 5,000? What's the potential? And the community decides what they want to do. We want to attract more women into the workforce. We want to attract immigrants to our county. We then look at the research and say, what is preventing those kinds of people from coming into the workforce? And we look at the root causes of that. And then we bring programming to the community to say, these are the root causes limiting your ability to attract these workers. You need to address these issues. The other approach, similar, but we work one-on-one with individual companies. So company leaders, here are the people. Who do you want to go after? Communities, those are very complex. They take a long time because you're trying to bring lots of people together. Individual companies are typically able to move well-run companies that day. They see the data, they see the trends, they see where the people are, and they're able to change their company strategy very rapidly.
Do you see much need for workers in the agricultural fields, like that sort of work in agriculture, like you do in California and Florida, some of the other agricultural states?
So we don't look at what the person will do. There's a lot of people out there, economists and things, studying the different skills. Community colleges are great at, you know, developing different skill sets and training people. We're showing you where the people are. It's the company and the community's responsibility to get those people trained. Every time you limit something, you limit your possibilities. So it'd be great if I need welders that, boy, there's 50 welders and I just have been marketing wrong, and let me market to them and boom, I've got 50 welders. It's not that simple. The people that are available, we have a very high labor force participation rate in Iowa. That means the percent of the population that could work, we have a very high percent of them working. That means there's less possibilities. You can't be that picky. You're going to have to take who's there and maybe modify how you run your business to adapt to their needs. And you likely will have to provide training in some way and skill development, and professional development to get the skills you need. People aren't just sitting around twiddling their thumbs with the skills you need.
Well, that sure sounds like quite an interesting position you have.
Every day is different.
You mentioned something that is not quite in line with what we're talking about, but you said in 1950 that the population of Florida, Minnesota, and Iowa were the same. And I don't remember the updates on that, but how, you know, many, many times more people in Florida and I guess in Minnesota. So Florida, it's easy to see why people move there, because for one thing, we didn't, in the 50s, we didn't have a retirement pull down there. We didn't have a lot of people retiring. A lot of Iowans, actually, a lot of Iowans can go down to Florida, pay no income tax, and live there for half a year, and then come back and live in Iowa for the other half a year. That is, I personally know somebody who did that, and I would think this is just deadly.
So you raise an interesting point. I like to compare Florida because it's so different. I'm probably a closet economic developer. I just never was smart enough to be an economic developer. Instead, I became an aerospace engineer. If you look at 1950, Iowa, Florida, Minnesota all had 2.5 million people. And I like to compare Florida for a reason, because Florida in 1950 changed, and they are now 7 times bigger than Iowa. Iowa's only 20-30% bigger, but they're 7 times bigger. Neither of us had a professional sports team in 1950. Look at what Florida has today, dozens of them. It's not just retirees. They changed their economy in many ways The air conditioner was invented in 1950, the window air conditioner. It made it that you could live and stand to live in Florida. But they went after the space industry. They went after the tourism industry. They went after retirees. They went after everybody. And not only do you get those people in there, but those people need houses. So you need more people to construct houses, and they need more restaurants. So you need more people for restaurants. So it just fed on itself. It's not just retirees going down there swimming. They're spending money, and that creates a draw for even more people. The weather doesn't hurt. But in that same time period, Minnesota has almost doubled their size. So it's not just weather. Minnesota, I call it not the innovation, the technology approach to economic development, but the constant drip. They have lots of things going. They've got Minneapolis, a major metropolitan area. They've got technology-focused cities like Rochester. They have all the lakes and the draw of the lakes. They have births that exceed deaths in lots of years. And they have been welcoming to immigrants. And you add all those little things together, and it adds up to an economy that's been growing. Their rural areas have been doing much better recently than Iowa's rural areas. So they have figured out how to grow the state and their workforce better than Iowa has. So there are lessons from these other communities to learn. We just have to decide, do we want to grow? And we're going to have to do things differently.
Well, I guess our time is pretty close to up. If anybody had a suggestion for that last question, however, I think we could discuss it.
Let me throw something out to discuss if you don't have any. There's an advertisement I saw in a Minnesota newspaper. And if I was going to leave you with one thought, it'd be this. So this advertisement says we're looking for employees. I think this company was looking for 1,000 new workers, which means you need 2,000 more people living population to get 1,000 more workers. And they said flexible holidays, right? You don't have to take off Christmas and Easter. They said we have prayer rooms at the facility. So if you need to pray during the middle of the day, we have those rooms available. They put in foot washing stations. Well, there's a certain religion that you have to wash your hands and your face and your feet before you pray. This was a laser-focused ad to attract this kind of person. They didn't talk about skills and what they needed. We want you to come work for us, and we will do these things because we want you to work for us and not our competition. Come work for us, and we will give you all these things, and we will train you. That's what companies are starting to have to do. This workforce problems across the country is just really difficult in Iowa because of our flat population. So if you're going to succeed in this game, you're going to have to do things different. Putting out a "we're hiring" sign is not going to solve the problem.
And of course, you have to have a culturally sensitive population for them to move into to some extent.
Absolutely. I'd say the thing we didn't talk about real fast is virtual people. What's that? Those are not people. It's doing things like process improvement, changing how you do things so that you get more out of the people you have. And then automated systems, robots, automated answering machines, things like that. Having machines do things to free up the people to do more complex things. So I think you'll see the companies that are succeeding in Iowa growing are going to have more and more automated systems. They're going to embrace process improvements like lean, continuous improvement. And the communities that grow are going to be embracing looking at things differently and being open to new kinds of people and new kinds of ways of doing things.
Do you have any influence on the decisions being made on both local levels and the state level to improve our internet capability?
I don't know that I have influence on anything. I just try to bring data to the table. So do we try to affect policy at Cirrus? Yes. We try to look and study at things and make that data available to leaders and communities and politicians. But I would argue things like broadband and water parks and things, amenities, do people want those? Yes. I would say you need to do all of that just to be in the game. Doesn't mean you're going to win the population game, but everybody's doing it across the country. We need to do it just to stay where we're at.
Decisions made in the legislature, for example. Decisions made in chambers of commerce, for example. I guess we have lots of programs that we can line up to deal with those issues. Thank you so much, Ron.
Great to be here. If any of the listeners have a company that want to grow and attract workers, give us a call. We'll do what we can to help show you the data and show you opportunities and help you develop your plan to grow your company. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And your hosts for today have been Gina McAndrews and Paul Grierson and myself, Susan Franzen. We've been talking with Ron Cox, director of CIRIS, the Center for Industrial Research and Service. Ron discussed some of the ways Iowa could be more responsive. Last weekend was an example of a new situation. That's the new national holiday, Juneteenth. I went to the site of the event in Ames, and they interviewed some of the participants.
I was unable to talk with any of the organizers of the Ames event.
But one of the organizers of a Black Lives Matter march in Boone a year ago was in attendance and was able to explain some of the decisions about location that I hadn't understood. Here is the recording.
As we told you last week, although there were several events throughout the week celebrating the new national holiday of Juneteenth, commemorating the day the last enslaved persons were officially freed 2.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation was signed into law in the 15th Amendment, Ames Black Lives Matter organized the most inclusive event in Ames on Marigold. I couldn't talk to any of the organizers in Ames, but my friend Aja Lyons from Boone attended the Ames rally and explained to me why Marigold was chosen.
Sort of off the radar, I mean, except that the newspaper announced it and there were posters on Facebook, but it was not in a city space, a city authorized space. Like last year it was in Franklin Park, and this time it was a block party, which actually puzzled me. I was looking around for it the day before. You were not involved in the planning, is that right?
That is correct.
So you don't know about the selection of the location, or do you?
No, but I have an idea because I'm Black, and I believe this is organized by Black people and white allies. So where Marigold is, I mean, it's a pretty short street, but there are many Black people that live in that area that part of town heavily populated with Black people, so it makes sense to A, have a block party if we're celebrating Blackness, and B, have it in one of the few parts of Ames that have a high Black population. West Ames, and I would say where Laverne Apartments are, pretty much where most of the Black people in Ames live. So that was actually a pretty good area. They had nice and blocked off, and I mean, that's sort of what Black people in Black neighborhoods do, is have block parties. And I thought it was a perfect place to have it. And it was in a pretty low traffic area. So if you're going to have a block party, that was a great place to have it.
For most of the time I was at the celebration, I just took my chances to ask people why they were there. Here's a collage of the participants.
I am Deb Lewis, and I came to Juneteenth today out of curiosity, and I loved reading the article yesterday by Toya Younger, which was distributed on campus and was also in today's Ames Tribune, and I think was also supposed to be in the Register. So I hope that people will read about her being a cousin to
Opal Lee,
the woman who was standing next to Biden for the signing of the National Juneteenth celebration. So that got me started thinking about the importance of Juneteenth.
Well, thank you. So you want to say why you're here?
Well, it's Juneteenth. I think it's exciting that it's a national holiday. I was here last year, but it was at Franklin Park, and it's important, and it's a happy day. My name is Rhea Kiner, and I live in Ames, Iowa.
Why did you come to Juneteenth?
Why did I come to Juneteenth? Because I'm an advocate of Black Lives Matter, and my daughter is a mixed child, and I'm bringing her up here in Ames, and it is really important to me, and it's just always so much fun to see everybody come together and, you know, have an event that's about diversity. So it's amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, what are you doing here at Juneteenth?
Oh, I'm a volunteer right now, so I had a lot of free time, and I, like, wanted to do something. So, like, I've just been helping set up and, like, direct people and, like, serve food and whatnot. So I'm mostly here just because Juneteenth is really important to America's history in general, but specifically to Black Americans, about just about how they got their independence and how long it took for us to get to the point that we are today, and just how much more work that we need to do in general.
Would you like to tell me why you're here, what you're doing here?
Yeah, so, like, Juneteenth is a very important holiday for, like, Black Americans in general. So, like, I'm here to just celebrate with people and just to, like, learn more and just to support Black businesses and just commune with our community, basically.
I wanted to ask Aja a question of the actions that might be inspired by the holiday.
Well, is there anything else that you would like to get across for Juneteenth?
I would say that every bit of American history matters and has value, and we shouldn't hide the truth from our children or each other. And there were lynchings in Iowa, and so this isn't just a Southern thing, even though Juneteenth is primarily about, you know, Dallas and Texas. Every aspect and every corner of the United States is relevant to every single corner in the middle of the United States. And so let's learn about all of it and share it and speak truth and make beautiful history going forward as we reflect on the past.
That is one way to diversify your workforce. Make people feel welcome. And I think maybe some people are surprised to know that Black Lives Matter is actually an organization that makes Black people feel welcome. And in fact, I met Aja because the Black Lives Matter march a year ago in Boone, which had after George Floyd was killed. So, but it had 250 people in Boone, Iowa. And the way they celebrated Juneteenth in Boone is a stark contrast to what we did in Ames, because they had a truck with a big back the blue flag parked in the very same area where they had their Black Lives Matter last year. And incidentally, the police were wonderful for that Black Lives Matter. The whole community was great. They handed out water bottles in front of the police station. The movie theater provided free popcorn, and it was a very affirming day as opposed to this year in Boone. So there are all kinds of ways to make people feel at home or not.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Susan Franzen, Paul Wearson, and myself, Gina McAndrews. Other voices you heard were Chris Deal telling us about the innovations of the Forge Project in Jefferson. Ronald Cox explained how Cirrus is working to bring innovations to attract businesses and people to Iowa. And lastly, we spoke with several people at the Juneteenth party in Ames. including Aja Lyons, who was an organizer of the Black Lives Matter march in Boone, just after George Floyd's murder in Minneapolis.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoyfm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories.
Local Talk was engineered by Michael Murphy. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Local Talk is a radio production trading workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoyfm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just hit the yellow Donate, Become a Member button. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.